Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Scottish Watches podcast. I think we're at episode 25, but you completely confused me the last episode, so I really don't know. All I know is this is Adrian plus two, so we are now two episodes away from my break.
We're at episode 25, which is a quarter century, and you're a century. That's a way to work it out.
Okay. Well, I was more thinking that in the same way as you have at BC and AD, this would be 2BJ, because it's two episodes after Bark and Jack.
2BJ sounds like a good weekend.
Or we could be we could be AS3, depending on... No, KS3, depending on if you want to measure from Caitlin, because, you know, like, some churches measure the
Caitlin?
What did I say, Caitlin? Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, Kat. some churches measure, like, Gregorian calendars and Jewish calendars for... our Jewish friends, and the other calendar. What's the other calendar? Gregorian and Julian calendar.
Brian.
The Brian calendar. So we could either be a schism that measures from the Caitlin Schmidt date, so this would be KS3, or from the Bark and Jack date, in which case this would be BJ2. Easy.
Caitlin has been on twice.
Oh.
So where do you work? She has risen again.
The second coming of Caitlin. It's a difficult one. It's a difficult one. These are the theological challenges that face us. There we go.
Anywho, moving swiftly on.
Episode 25.
Who would have thought we would have cranked out 25 episodes of a little podcast from two dicks in Scotland talking about watches?
Actually, quite ridiculous. But there we go. Such is life. Such is the foibles of this universe that these things sometimes happen. The coming together of two Ricks.
One
great mind shared between two not so great people. Between us, the two brain cells unite.
Yes.
Anyway.
It's like a game of Pong.
A game of Pong.
So, how are you? What's been happening in your world?
I am fine. I am still catching up on everything that's been happening in Baselworld. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Mainly ugly. Well, it's been some good, though, from what I can see. But it's just, it's trying to get beneath all the stuff that everybody else reports. It's trying to find out what some of these smaller watch brands or less popular watch brands actually did at Baselworld.
Well,
I've got
a story for you.
Oh, hold on 2 seconds. Because you know what the really bizarre thing is? None of their websites are updated. See if you want to go and look at the... Bulova. So Bulova have produced this recreation of a watch they did in the 80s and an LCD display. There's nothing on Bulova's...
Computron.
There's nothing on Bulova's website about it. Nothing at all.
Yes, there is.
What? Yes, there is.
Yes, there is.
Oh, well, there wasn't when I looked this morning.
There was last night.
How?
No, you need to use a thing called Google.
Right.
And it will take you to the specific pages. It's not... I don't think it's linked in the main part because it's not available for sale yet.
You can't find it. Can't find it anywhere.
Yes, you can.
Okay, right. Well, you're just cleverer than I am. We know that already. Move along. Nothing
we know that already.
Nothing
see,
to see
no,
here.
No. What you need to do is increase the font size on your PC a little bit. You'll be able to see it.
Shut it. Right.
Well, that takes me down a different rabbit hole.
Okay.
But I was going to tell you... Right, we'll do the Bulova one first.
Okay, go on.
So as people might know, last year I got myself a weird grail. It was a watch I'd seen back when I was in school, and it was a TV programme in the UK called The Secret Life of Machines.
Was that when...
And they did an episode.
Corporal punishment was still available in schools, was it? See, I'm not the only one that can do... I'm not the only one that can do age jokes.
Uh-huh. Well, that kind of fell flat. But anyway, so this great TV show, which is on YouTube, you should check it out if you're at all geeky. A guy called Tim Unkin used to take things, vacuum cleaner, central heating systems, the internal combustion engine, and the watch, and he would go through the history of how it came to be. This was in the years before YouTube and Wikipedia or even the World Wide Web. So anyway, he did one on the quartz watch, and it went from sundials and stones right the way through water clocks, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And one of the featured watches was the Bulova Accutron. Mm-hmm. And I'd never seen one of these things before because obviously this thing came out in the 60s. This was the precursor to quartz. It uses a tuning fork. It vibrates at something like 360 hertz. And it's got the smoothest sweeping motion of the second hand. Better than anything. It looks even better than spring drive and the new Zenith stuff. Because it must be an anniversary for them of something. Mm-hmm. Bulova, which is part of Citizen Group, had a massive display area at Basel. And they had all these Accutrons from like the 50s right through to the 70s, showed you the technology, the different models, they showed you the Computron thing that you were talking about, the LED watch, and because I had an interest in it and owned one, I spent ages taking loads of photos and little video clips and stuff. So that was one thing, and the other thing was I spotted a brand called Squally.
Mm-hmm.
You heard of them?
Yes, I seem to recall that a certain gentleman is a big fan of Squally.
So that had kind of jaded my perceptions of the brand. Mm-hmm. So I wandered up, saw that they had a display there and thought, here we go, let's have a look.
Uh-huh.
Wandered over and I was trying to take a photo of their stuff when one of the people from the booth approached me and said, anything I can help you with? And I thought, right, okay, let's just see what this is all about. So I said, I'm interested in finding out a little bit more about the brand. Tell me about the watches. Show me what you got. And they went away and got, I think it was one of the guys that deals with the higher up stuff within the brand itself.
Mm-hmm.
And he took me through all the different models they had on show, showed me some new stuff they had coming out, which is like Kevlar composite case materials.
All right, okay.
Some really funky dials, some really cool case shapes, different types of strap. You'll have seen it in the photos that I sent across to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then went through to one of the meeting rooms where they obviously speak to their dealers. And I got to try them out and see them. And the thing is, that's when my perception started to change a bit. Now, they're not a high brand. They're not Tudor. They're not Rolex. Yep. They're nowhere near those levels. They're nowhere near probably even Oris. But I'd been jaded because I had seen a certain YouTube personality constantly talking about them. And it made me think, because of association, that they weren't that great.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually changed my mind. I thought they were okay for the price point. They were okay. You've got people out there that like Steinhardt for some reason, but they'll turn their nose up at Squally.
Uh-huh.
And I was convinced otherwise.
Cool.
So there's a little aside story of one of the smaller independents that was at Basel.
Uh-huh. So they brought you into their fold. They gentrified you.
They did indeed. They did. I don't know if I should say this, but when I brought up the whole TGV watch.
Did you bring up the subject, did you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
Scottish, not give an F.
Go on.
So I brought that up and I said, yeah, that TGV watch. And the person who I will not name,
mm-hmm.
because it's not cool to name them,
mm-hmm.
basically said, yeah, we weren't up for that idea.
Right, okay. So, backfired.
I wouldn't say backfired. I would just say maybe they got railroaded a little bit.
Right.
What the guy said was he didn't feel it was appropriate for somebody that was running an independent review channel
mm-hmm.
to then tie in with a watch brand.
Uh-huh.
So there you go.
Although we are obviously open to any Rolex tie-in that they wish to push our way.
Well, the new Zenith that's coming out in collaboration with Scottish Watches should be pretty cool and everyone should pre-order that straight away.
I mean, we are effectively Zenith's outreach to the UK, really. Me and Julian, strong bond.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you don't even know the half of it. You weren't on stage with the guy, drunk as a skunk.
I still see the photos. I had another look at all the photos you sent of the one of you all trying to steal the Zed from Zenith off of the stage.
That was us putting it there.
Was that you putting it back?
Right, okay, so there's a couple of photos. You've not seen everything.
A New Yorker and two Glaswegians. What is the worst that I'm surprised Basel World didn't close there and then.
No. There's a whole story to this. So this is going to be an episode full of little snippet stories because it probably is a little bit more interesting than giving you the specs of the latest whatever from Brightling.
Go Hodinkee for that.
Yeah, you go Hodinkee for that. Somebody we bumped into was Ariel Adams
uh-huh.
from A Blog to Watch.
Yeah, was he in jeans and a t-shirt or was he in a suit?
He is just cool, right? He doesn't care. He's like us, you know, he just likes watches and he doesn't want to wear a suit and he doesn't want to look like a dick. The thing Adrian said a couple of podcasts ago about how can people walk around Baselworld in a three-piece suit, it's sweltering in there. I was kicking around jeans, trainers, t-shirt. So was
leather
he.
Jacket.
Ariel Adams. No, leather jacket I left in the hotel. You just wish you were as cool as me and had a motorbike. So, Ariel Adams was basically wearing a trackie. You'll have seen the photos.
See, if I go to Baselworld, I am so either wearing a three-piece suit or I'm going to wear a kilt. I'm going to go to Baselworld and I'm going to take my kilt with me because I think that that's the way to go.
Somebody did. They look like a fool.
Is that right? Well, I think if we all go in kilts, and the guy who had what's the name of the chap, the Cronondo, who has the the kind of camel coat with all the watches stuck to it. I think we should do that with kilts, and we'll just have all these really expensive watches dangling from our dangly bits and our sporrans.
He was a really cool guy.
Mm-hmm.
Liked talking to him really, really briefly.
Uh-huh.
He put something on his Instagram, right? This is a guy that Asian fella, and he's got all these different watches. They're not all shitters either. There was like a Tudor GMT. Well, I suppose you've got a Tudor GMT, so it's a shitter. He had one of them breast pocket. At least yours isn't broke yet. So he was kicking around, and I literally saw him in amongst all these people taking photographs, and it was like a serious thing. There was lights and a tripod, and I just leant in with my camera, click, and I was about to vacate the situation, and he came chasing after me. Oh, what's it for? What's it for? So I gave him one of the Scottish Watch's business cards, and he was like, oh, who are you? And I was like, Ricky. Oh, nice to meet you. And I was like, cool, okay, I'll leave you to what you're doing with the guys there. And that was it. So I got my photo, off I went. Then he posted on Instagram a few days ago saying, here is me getting a photo shoot with Scottish Watches, and it's all these other people that had spent ages with the guy, and just leant in, click one photo, and he's given us all the kudos for it. So no, he was cool, and there's loads of photos of him kicking about. You'll see, we'll put some photos in the show notes of him. But where was I? What was I talking about? Was it the Zenith party?
Zenith, yeah. Yes. How you trashed the
Zenith party. That was really strange.
Bear in mind, it was my invitation. It was my invitation you had. So they're going to blame... They're going to bill me for all the damage.
No, it kind of was, yes, it was. There was that part of it. But also, the Chisholm guys basically dragged me along. So what the plan of attack was for Basil was I had got myself an apartment. Mm-hmm. I'd offered Isaac the couch because he was coming across. And Chris, who's the manager over in Princes Street, Chisholm Hunter, he had a hotel literally 3 minutes away from Basil World itself.
Right.
So the original plan was... we were going to do Basel, get an Uber, back to the apartment, get changed, get an Uber, into Basel again, go to this party for a few hours or whatever, and then go back to the apartment, go to sleep, come back to Basel in the morning. But what ended up happening was, we did the show, then we went to a pub, then we had the idea of food, and because I don't eat wheat products because they don't really agree with me, not celiac or anything like that as far as I'm aware, but you know, they give me indigestion and whatnot. Mm-hmm. We went to this place and the only food they had was like pasta and pizza.
Uh-huh.
So I had the great idea of, well, I'll just take two antihistamines and then I'll eat a pizza. And it worked. It absolutely worked. I was fine. So I had a pizza for the first time in like 3 years.
Uh-huh.
I didn't die. I didn't have anaphylactic shock or anything. We came out of there and we thought, right, well, it's getting late now. I mean, this party thing at Zenith's happening at 9. It's going to take us a wee while to get an Uber and head back and get changed. And Chris said, well, just come round to the hotel because it's round the corner, I think. Mm-hmm. He'd not been there yet.
Right.
So we all headed round with our backpacks, got to Chris's hotel, and it was like the smallest hotel room ever. Single bed, hardly any room for anything else. And we went in, and one by one, we went into the bathroom to get changed and get ready. Mm-hmm. So that was fine. And we thought, we'll just leave all our bags here. Uh-huh. And after there's anything, we'll collect them and we'll head back to this apartment.
Right.
So we did that. Headed to the Zenith thing, and it was like going to Amnesia or some big massive rave somewhere or a big music festival, and we were stood outside queuing to get in, and it was like the part in Kevin and Perry Go Large where there's the big queue and the guy's coming down the front going, ugh, you're ugly, you offend my mirror, you can't get in. So we're standing there going, shit, we're not going to get in here because we're dressed like Jakes. But we did, we got in, we got signed in, we got this little cool name tag thing on our wrist. Mm-hmm. We get told some crap about, oh, you need to stay until 2 o'clock, so it's a big surprise. Right. Big surprise was it was still open at 2 o'clock and we were the only people left. Got in there at 9:30, wandered around and thought, okay, we're underdressed and we are at pay grades much lower than all these people in this room. But hey, we're Scottish, we're going to enjoy ourselves, we're going to have fun.
Yeah.
Then we found out the best news I have heard this year. Do you know what it was?
Free drink.
Free drink. Start to finish, free drink. It was Moe, it was gin, vodka, everything you wanted was just free. So we hadn't eaten properly because we did this pizza thing. That was all we'd eaten all day. And we just drank champers from start to finish. And I thought, listen.
And you'd taken two antihistamines as well. And then you were downing
the
champagne.
I was rocking. Yeah, I was absolutely
toasted.
Rocking it. Toasted, wasted on a different planet. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to take full advantage of this because I'm buying a Zenith.
Uh-huh.
I'm paying you for all these people's drinks.
Absolutely. Get stuck in there.
Get stuck in. So immediately got drunk because I don't drink.
Mm-hmm.
I don't not drink as much as you don't drink, but
half
I don't drink.
Dan.
Yeah, oh, I'm a cheap date. Mm-hmm. So I get wasted. And we saw in the corner they were doing like photos. They had these letters spelling out Zenith and people were standing behind them. Pretty much like the shop we got in SIHH.
Right.
And Chris says, oh, later on we need to get a group shot behind there.
Uh-huh.
And I said, right, I've got an idea. What we'll do is we'll put you on the Z
uh-huh.
and then I'll go in behind you and pretend I'm performing CPR on you. Isaac can stand at the side looking all mortified. And he thought, that's a great idea. We'll see if we come up with anything better. And we didn't. So at 2 in the morning, we ended up over there at the photo shoot area, getting a photo of Chris sprawled out, legs everywhere, arms down the side, me looking in his face in shock horror, pressing down in his chest, and Isaac freaking out in the background.
Just planking.
The Scottish guys on tour.
Planking on plank, the Zenith.
Oh, wow. Now you're dating yourself 10 years. But, yeah, that was cool. Like I mentioned, we ended up on stage with Swiss Beats, Lost Frequencies, Julian, the CEO of Zenith, mm-hmm. and we just had a great time. It was fun. It was a good laugh. We bumped into some people we spoke to. I've got their business cards from different news organisations, actual real journalists, uh-huh. not a couple of neddy Scottish guys uh-huh. that started a podcast. And it was brilliant. We were the last to leave. I thought we'd get there about 9:30. We'll stay till maybe midnight, go and get some sleep because we've got this show to do. Mm-hmm. But no, it was maybe, I don't know, 3:30 by the time we wandered out, and we walked at 3:30. I don't remember getting to the hotel, but we ended up at Chris's hotel uh-huh. in his tiny little hotel room. Uh-huh. He decided he was going to sleep on the floor. It's his room. He slept on the floor.
Right.
Isaac was on one side of the bed, topping and tailing. I was on the other side of the bed. Chris snores like you wouldn't believe. We got a fairly good night's sleep. Me and Chris woke up. Isaac had been sitting in the bed for an hour watching us sleep. How freaky is that? Oh, man. So we got sorted out. Now, Isaac's like a young guy. He's only like about 18, 19.
Okay.
Obviously, I'm only 21, unlike yourself. Yeah, me and Chris had a slightly sore head in the morning. Uh-huh. But we got ourselves freshened up. We went downstairs and the three of us kind of went in at different times to the breakfast area and uh-huh. quoted the same room number for breakfast. So the hotel staff are probably going, how come this one guy in this one hotel room said three breakfasts?
Big eater.
So we did all that, and then I went to the toilet. When I came out, hotel staff had been at the room kicking up absolute funk, saying, right, okay, this is a room for one person. You guys had three people in here. You're not welcome back at this hotel. Like, we're never going to be there again.
Chucked out,
got outside. Oh, what time? We must have been about 9:00. And again, it was only 3 minutes to walk from his hotel to Basel again on uh-huh. the Friday morning, and walked in and see for that first hour, that was hard work. It was hard work trying to figure out what the hell was going on. Ditched my bag in the, they've got a free cloakroom area, right. So I just got rid of my bag and I just walked around the camera. For the first hour, I sat in the dark areas phoning my pals. I didn't try phoning you, I phoned everybody else. And then I got myself together, and that's when I started walking around the different areas, because this show is massive. Yeah, it's a lot smaller than previous years, but it was just awesome. Spoke to some guys at Porsche Design. Mm-hmm. They had, I can't remember the name, I don't know what it is. It's an old Porsche chrono thing. It's kind of DLC black,
right,
from the 70s. They had that on display, along with a classic 911 and one of the new, I think it was a GT3 or something like that, in that lovely green colour. Mm-hmm. And I watched somebody doing a watch photo shoot. So they had all the LED panels out, and they had a guy in the car with his arm with a watch up beside the headrest taking photos. So I was like, oh, I'm quite interested in this, because obviously cameras and stuff like mm-hmm. that. I don't know where I was going with that conversation, but yeah, Zenith Party was awesome.
So you didn't manage to drop the dance mix of the Proclaimers then alongside Swiss Beats?
Nope, no bits and pieces. But no, the tracks that he was coming out with, obviously I saw behind the scenes, because mm-hmm. I've done DJing professionally for a while, and the guy that was with him was basically setting everything up on Serato, and Swiss Beats was just pressing a button on the controller for the next track to come in. But it was great. It was all the classic R&B. It had, I was going to say R. Kelly, but I wouldn't say that anymore. It had all the Eminem stuff, 50 right. Cent. You had Usher. All these tracks from the past 20 years that were really, really cool, and it kept the party going all night long. Good. He was great. Everybody else, all the hosts that were on stage. And then at the very end, Julian came on to thank everybody for being there. Oh, it was just brilliant. Loved it.
Good, good.
Can't wait to go back.
if they'll have you back. You may be blackballed now. Or actually, it's probably me that's blackballed, because it's my name that was against invitation.
Oh, it was you that set up going to see the new watches as well, wasn't it?
At Zenith. Yes.
Have I told you about them yet?
No. I mean, you've told me a lot. I've seen some photos. I mean, but you've not actually told me what you think of it.
Well, we got some behind-the-scenes knowledge on what happened with the Inventor.
Yeah.
I really hope I'm not boring everyone.
Well, just to interject, when I place an order for it, which was after seeing Julian at Chisholm Hunter in Edinburgh when Zenith came, because you bought yours through Rocks at the arcade. It was mooted that this was going to be a 500-piece limited edition, and it was then mooted later on in a private conversation with a different individual that actually 300 was probably more realistic as to how many they could make, because the technology was proving still quite awkward. And I see that it is still coming out as a yet unnamed quantity limited edition, but I've certainly seen between 300 and 400 now mentioned. So have you been given some insight in just how difficult this process has been then?
Yep. I was told 500 a year once they get up to capacity of production.
Right.
But they're hoping to perfect the technology. This is new stuff. The silicon oscillator is a new idea. The problems they've had that I don't think has been reported on anywhere else is, because it is new, they need to test it in all different ways. And the 10 that came out as the Defy Lab obviously went to customers, and they've basically been beta testers for this thing.
Yeah.
So the results have come back, and the problem they found was, because it's such a small part moving at such a high frequency and it's a very brittle substance, they were breaking.
Right.
So if you were to bang your normal watch off the car door or the desk or a door jam or whatever, then it'd probably be okay. You might knock the balance wheel slightly. You might knock it out of sync. It might change its beat rate or its amplitude or something like that. But the balance bridge or the balance cock that holds things together with all the bracing mechanisms and shock absorbing, that's hundreds of years worth of technology that is kind of perfected, and it's pretty good. So with the Zenith thing, they have had to redesign parts of it. The small wheel that engages at the bottom is now almost like a clutch mechanism,
right,
or a dual mass flywheel. It's got rubber fingers that take the shock and the bounce. So if you were to clonk your hand down on the desk or something like that, it's not going to break off, because it is such small brittle parts that all these knocks and bumps could potentially ruin a watch. And it's not like you can just take it to your local service centre, because it's technology that only Zenith can deal with. So that was part of the reason that it was delayed, and it's taken until now to become ready. It's also part of the reason that the price has gone up. It originally was quoted at 12 grand and now it's up at 15.5.
Right.
So that's a bit of a hard pill to swallow, but there you go. You know, if you're going to be first, you're going to have to take it in the ass a bit. What was the other thing? They've increased the beat rate. It originally was 15 hertz, now it's up to 18.
Right.
That has decreased. It's increased the performance, as in the accuracy, but it's decreased the power reserve from 60 hours to 50 hours.
All right, okay.
It also looks different. The way that the mechanism oscillates back and forward looks different. It's getting closer to that, you know, what you can see under 24 frames a second type idea. It's getting closer to that, so it looks odd. Doesn't look quite as good as the 15 hertz one that we've obviously seen previously, but it's still cool. And obviously they've changed it's now the bezel is Aeronith, which is the kind of pumice stone effect aluminium.
Yep.
On a titanium case. It's the same but different.
That's all very interesting. But is it cool? Is it epic?
It still is cool. It's cool, but it's been pre-launched and dangled in front for so long now. I mean, this is now...
You're not encouraging me here.
Well, that's 18 months since I first saw it. I think it was September, October 2017, I saw the thing and wore it for the first time. And we're now almost, well, a quarter of the way plus through 2019. By the time it arrives, it will be 2 years since I first saw it. So, yeah, you know, okay, cool. I am still excited, but, you know, it's like hearing about a film coming out, and then 2 years later, it comes out, but you've already seen about 5 minutes worth of trailer, so you kind of have a great idea of what's involved in it.
Right, okay.
It'll be stunning, it'll be amazing, it'll be the first of, and as Tim Lawson says, the first of anything is always the classic. It's always the one that you can't replace. You can do better, but you can't change first.
Yeah, fair enough.
So that was cool. That wasn't even the best thing.
Before you move on, how does it wear? Does it wear okay?
It's quite big and chunky.
That's fine. Happy with that.
But it wears fine. They said that you will have options for bracelets and straps, which is good, because I'm not keen on the rubber, and I'm keen on a blue strap, just not keen on the rubber with, I think it's the alligator or something, or crocodile leather on the top.
Right.
It doesn't really gel with me. I'd rather have it on some kind of bracelet or full rubber.
Interesting.
But then they pulled out their limited edition Tourbillon. Did you see that one?
Yes, that one I did see. It's like the Defy classic chronograph, but with tourbillons rather than normal springs.
Yeah, it's got the mechanism where it goes at...
It's a one hundredth of a second chronograph, so it goes round the dial once a second, and the dial split into 100.
Yeah, so it still does that, which is like the, is that the El Primero 21?
The Defy El Primero 20, yeah, something like that, yes.
Mm-hmm. It's like that one. And then, but the tourbillon cage and everything inside it, that starts to spin in massively increased rates as well. So it's almost like it's having an epileptic fit in your wrist.
Yeah, I think that must go around, I think it goes around, I don't think it goes around once a second. Is it maybe once every 6 seconds, possibly? But it flies around.
Yeah, it's, and it makes a noise. It's like a kid's toy going off.
Oh, right, okay.
It was really nice. It's got a carbon case to it. That wore nice. Got some photos of that. Mm-hmm. The show does the El Primero 50 collection, which is the three reproduction models.
Mm, they look nice.
Yeah, there was gold, rose gold, and I think white gold.
Uh-huh.
At that point, I think I was quite tired, so I can't remember fully what I was getting told. But they were nice and a nice presentation case. And you know how you get vintage re-editions, but you look at it and you go, yeah, that's a re-edition. These things looked like the vintage, the font styling, the way that the writing was on the dial, the case shape, everything looked as if it was something that had been put away in new old stock and then retrieved from a safe half a century later. So that was cool. No, the Zenith guys were really, really decent, open, honest, told us the backstory of everything that we asked about. Got to check out some really cool watches, and yeah, I'm still excited for the Inventor coming out.
Cool.
It's just, you know, it's a long time coming, and I'm just chapping at the bit.
Yes, it has been quite a wait, but no, I think it'll be worth it. It certainly looks good.
Well, not for you. You only put your name down in December.
I will be the first one to own one in Scotland. That much I can guarantee you.
You think?
I know.
You think?
Ah, just you wait.
Were you across? Just partying with these guys? Just, were you there?
Just you wait. I all will be revealed. All will be revealed at some point in the near future. But I have it in good authority that I will be the first one to receive. I will get mine before you get yours.
You don't know what I took back from Switzerland, do you?
So there we go. But yeah, no, I'm happy that my place is secure in number one, where I belong in getting this watch before you get yours, despite the fact that I ordered mine a couple of months after you ordered yours. But we will see.
A year.
We will see. The proof of the pudding will be the eating, but I'm quietly confident. I will not reveal all just yet, but you know, I don't want to say that I have an email that says you'll be the first one to get one in Scotland, but, you know, I don't want to say that because that might not be true.
Okay.
It could be true. Who knows?
Guess that's because I'm picking mine up from Switzerland.
Guess we'll find out. Oh, you're going to go to the factory? Are you getting, it's like picking up a new Mercedes or a VW or something. You get to go to the factory and pick it up. Okay.
Listen, when you're spending £400,000 on a watch, that's the least you expect.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Cool, good. So what else attracted your attention? Oh, actually, I tell you what attracted my attention was actually not really a watch, it was a watch story, but it wasn't about a new watch. I don't know if you followed what happened to Fratello. Did you see this?
Oh.
About the customs.
Yes.
I thought that was brilliant. I mean, obviously, poor sod, but he should have known better. Because this isn't the first time this has happened.
Right, okay, explain to everybody what you're talking about.
Okay, so when you go from country to country, there is technically a limit on the amount of goods you're supposed to carry into a country and carry out of a country. Now, normally, the thing you have on your wrist, or if your girlfriend or wife or you happen to have a expensive diamond necklace or earrings and all the rest of it, that's generally just ignored. But in theory, what you should have with you, if you have something that's particularly expensive, is a pre-customs declaration that says, no, I'm bringing this into your country and I will be taking it out of your country when I leave, and here's my ticket that shows that I'm coming in and I'm leaving. It's a return ticket. And then in theory, the customs guys are supposed to go, aye, okay then. But at things like watch shows or anything whereby you feel like you're going to take a couple of watches with you, the customs guys are perfectly within their rights. I can't remember what the value is within the, because between here and Switzerland, it'll be the European Economic Area, I think is the description, are perfect within the right to say, actually, mate, we don't think that's for personal use. We think you're bringing this in to sell it. Or if you get caught on the way out and have no proof that you brought it in the first place, they can say, well, we just have to assume that you bought this while you were here, because you can't prove that you imported it as part of your travel plans. Therefore, we're going to charge you some excise duty on it, some customs duty. And basically, for whatever reason, the guys at Fratello, I don't know what watches he was taking in. I've got the article here, but I don't actually know if it tells you. Basically, had a load of watches with him, and the good people of the Swiss version of HMRC decided to stop him and basically either say, well, you either pay the tax on this for exporting it from the country or re-importing it, or we confiscate them. And it cost him, as I understand it, $4,000, which is about the price of a bottle of water from a Swiss pub, but nonetheless, still a bit of a nasty shock. Did you follow this happening as it was going on? Was it a chat within the...
No, I was back. No, I saw this getting reported in the groups. We were only away the Thursday and then came back the Friday evening. Mm-hmm. I think this happened maybe Friday, Saturday.
Right.
But yeah, that's kind of what I read. Now, I didn't know anything about this. Mm-hmm. My silly interpretation of how customs work would be if you were to go to sell something, mm-hmm. or you were buying something and bringing it back. And that's where, you know, in the watch groups, they say if you're going abroad to buy a watch, mm-hmm. buy the watch, put it in your wrist and then mail the box to yourself.
Yes.
Which obviously we do not condone, allegedly. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know if you were taking... Like, obviously, I was taking a lot of camera equipment with me. I took audio recorders. I had one watch. I was potentially thinking of bringing two. I didn't realise that I would have to tell them that. I only thought, you know, if you're going to sell or you're going to buy, then you tell them. I didn't realise that you had to declare anything you were bringing over a certain value. So that was news to me. But yeah, the story that you told there is pretty much bang on. And a lot of people were saying, that's just the Swiss for you. That's the way they are. And I remember seeing a video on YouTube from a channel called VinWiki that's mm-hmm. a kind of luxury car channel. They've mm-hmm. got some amazing stories, and there was a bunch of people that went on like a cannonball, gumball style run mm-hmm. to Switzerland, and the shit they got from Swiss authorities for driving around, you know, there was thousands of pounds worth of fines just thrown at them because they knew they had money. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a little bit like this, mm-hmm. who knows, but it was a real scary story. And reading what people are saying, you know, he took a collection of vintage watches across to take photos of them, which to a normal person sounds a bit daft. But if you're in Switzerland and all you do is cuckoo clocks, watches and chocolate, mm-hmm. that sounds like a decent enough story to me. I'd have believed it.
No, that, I mean, and it is a quite a low value. It's something like the equivalent of about £400 that you're supposed to effectively not go through the green channel when you're, you know, you're supposed to go and declare. But because you've declared it on the other direction, you've got the paperwork to match up. Now, largely speaking, customs officers ignore this because they say, well, you're just wearing one watch, so that's fine. But they're absolutely within
$400.
Their rights. It's a really low value.
That's like a pair of AirPods.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
My phone is worth more than that.
Absolutely. And in theory, if you were to pitch up and you happen to have... I sometimes carry two mobile phones with me. That, mm-hmm. yeah, if you were to pitch up or an expensive laptop, you happen to have an iPad and a lap, absolutely. They are, in theory, not normally in practice, able to say, well, you're only allowed to take in so much value of goods before you get taxed on it, unless you can prove that you actually brought it in here in the first place because you declared it as a kind of round trip that you were doing. So, yeah, they will all know better for next time. And certainly mm-hmm. for Switzerland, because you're right, they do have a bit of a reputation for this because it's easy money. I mean... Yeah. They've got budgets to meet. Yeah, always be very aware of either taking watches if you happen to decide to take them in the box that you bought them in, or taking more than one watch where it is obvious that those watches are of significant value. I mean, I took three watches with me to Northern Italy. In theory, now none of them were particularly valuable, but although obviously the Alpinus is now worth something like £10,000 in the secondary market. In theory, I should have got a bit of paper at UK customs to say I am taking these out of the country and I have paid UK duty on them when I bought them, so that when I come back in to the UK, if I get stopped either leaving the country I'm going to or coming back to the UK, I can show all the paperwork and it's round trip. Sometimes it's good to carry, take a photo of the receipts of all your watches and stuff like that that you buy and just store it in a folder in your phone so that you can actually show as close to proof of purchase without going through all the rigmarole of actually getting customs paperwork. Just take a photo of the receipt and have that stored in your phone somewhere. So if you ever get into bother, you stand a chance of showing where you bought it from and that therefore you've paid the duty and that you had brought it into the country and now you're just leaving the same country with it. So there you go.
Well, I think consumer advice showing them my Instagram page would probably suffice there.
Well, maybe.
Because then it's like, here's the watches from 2 years ago that I bought. But I think this has probably put people off bringing a lot of stuff with them.
I'm sure Waco's been caught out with this. I think he got away with it. But I do, in the deepest recesses of my crazy mind, recall some story about having him spending several hours showing that this was not a customs issue at some airport somewhere. So I think it's happened to him. I think he managed to give acceptable explanations and proof of documentation. But there we go. Consumer advice.
Well, he could probably just pull out one of his previous editions of one of his magazines and say, look, there's me wearing this 2 years ago.
Yes, possibly.
Enjoy.
Possibly.
He's a bit like us, I think. He doesn't take any shit and he knows how to party. Yeah, I think he'd a broken hand or a broken arm or something.
Yeah,
he was still raving away.
I saw a video and it looked like he had a stookie on his wrist. I'm not sure. I've not heard of anything in particular that he did.
He wouldn't let me sign it.
Now that would have been funny.
Well, what's even more funny is Isaac was running around like a wee roving reporter for Scottish Watches. Uh-huh. We're gonna have to get him on the podcast because he's brilliant. Uh-huh. And he came up to me and went, look, this was before we went to the party, this was at Baselworld itself. He's like, look, I met Waco. I was like, all right, cool. He's like, yeah. Told him about Scottish Watches. I said we need to speak to him and like get him on the podcast. I was like, oh, Jesus. Well done.
Do.
Then at the Zenith party, after about 14 champagnes, I saw him. And walked up bold as brass, pushed the guy who was speaking to out the way. I was like, hey, how's it going? Like your videos. When are you coming on our podcast?
And he said, who are you?
I gave him a business card because I could hardly speak. And then about 10 minutes later, I thought, did I do that? Did I dream that? He's probably looking at a business card going, who the hell was that drunk Scottish twat?
Good stuff. So you partied hard, seems to be the general feeling.
I did. I did. I kicked the arse right out of it, and I didn't intend to. I blame Chris for this. Chris is originally from Pollock in Glasgow, and if you know Pollock in Glasgow,
take
we
no
don't
prisoners.
Need to continue this conversation any further. No, I had an idea. Go along, party for a couple of hours, say hello, get some snaps, and go back to the hotel, get a sleep, or go back to the apartment, get a sleep, and then be in good nick for the next morning. Mm-hmm. But no, it was a great experience. And yeah, the amount of people, again, that have seen this and were thought, right, okay, next year, Basel. People have seen what I've said about SIHH, the Geneva Car Show, in Baselworld, and they're starting to get a feel for it. It's not a stuffy trade show. You can have great fun. It's inexpensive if you know what you're doing and you follow like our cool handy guides that we put on the website and how to get to places for a couple hundred quid or less.
Cool.
Great show. And that's without even getting near most of the watches.
Good.
So I'm going to ask you a question.
All right, okay.
Of all the reporting that you've not seen because you've been skiing,
yes.
What have you seen that you dislike? What has like really got under your skin that you've seen? What's about things?
Oh, that's a tough one. So report of the reporting or of the watches? So of...
Either or.
Well, I've been surprised by how little reporting there's actually been in comparison to SIHH. Now, SIHH is what, 40 brands? Something like that?
And 33, I think some,
and I think on the Hodinkies and the A Blog to Watches and all the rest of it, you could pretty much see what everybody had done. Whereas there's 500 brands there. And I think all I've seen is the reporting on the usual suspects and a couple of fans' favourites. And the websites of the companies that you know that were there are atrocious. You just can't find anything. In terms of actual stuff that I thought, what are you doing? I don't think there's been anything particularly horrible. I mean, I think there's been some real letdowns from both Rolex and Tudor. I think some of the other companies have exceeded expectation, particularly Breitling and TAG. But I don't think I've seen anything yet, I'm sure I will, that's actually made me go, oh, what are you on? Whereas actually at SIHH, with the whole code 1159, there was coverage that was just, wait a minute here, you're just at it, you're reporting stuff you know that you don't believe. I don't think I've seen anybody say anything yet that I've thought, wait a minute here, you're on the payroll, mate. I mean, the solid gold G-Shock, was that there? Did you go to the G-Shock stand?
They wouldn't let me in.
They wouldn't let you in?
They were kind of weird. You would think of all the people that were there, I mean, it's Casio.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. It's Casio. You make... I was going to say something that's going to get us blackballed again.
Really?
They were kind of...
Just a bit out themselves, were they?
So I juked up to where the entrance was to... It wasn't even like a meeting room or anything. It was just like their internal showroom area.
Yeah.
And get body checked by one of the guys. And I said, can I go in and see what you've got, take some photos? And they said, who are you? And I showed them the press thingy, obviously Scottish Watches, because we're highfalutin and whatnot now. And he just looked at it and went, have you got an appointment? And I'm like, you're Casio? you sell 12 quid watches, what are you playing at? And they weren't up for it at all, so sold them.
Really?
Went across to Citizen, went across to Seiko, Grand Seiko. Mm-hmm. That was cool.
Right.
They had, I think it was 50 years ago, they brought out their Astron quartz.
Yep.
They had that on display. They had all kinds of vintage stuff, the originals and the re-editions that you could check out. You could speak to the staff. They were dead nice. Casio, assholes. Up your game, Casio.
Oh, okay. Although I thought Seiko, what Seiko decided to do this year was a bit of a letdown in that they've got all these anniversaries, so it was the I might get this wrong, but it was basically the 50th anniversary of the chronograph, the automatic chronograph, so the Pogue, the 50th anniversary of quartz, and I think it's the 20th or the 25th anniversary of the spring drive, but everything they've produced seems to start with five figures. There didn't strike me that there was very much that they actually produced. You know, a reissue of the Pogue, maybe 1,500 quid, $2,000, if it's all really, really nice. Fair enough, but they didn't seem to produce anything in Seiko or Grand Seiko that was actually, you know, for Joe Schmo. It all seemed to be incredibly expensive. I don't know if that's just a sign of the times that actually they feel like they can now take on Rolex, which, to be fair, they should have been trying to do years ago. And so they're just upping their prices and producing really expensive stuff, or whether there's more to come later in the year for them to try and upset Omega when Omega have their big run at the moon stuff. But I haven't seen anything that looked particularly mass market. I've maybe just not seen the coverage.
They might have the whole vision of Lexus. Because obviously Lexus in the UK is a decent enough brand.
Yeah.
But I don't consider Lexus the same as Porsche or Mercedes.
Yes.
Whereas in the States, Lexus is held in very high regard. Mm-hmm. So maybe in the States, Grand Seiko has got the name they were looking for, and they do stand head and shoulders with Rolex and are seen that way, but not everywhere else in the world. So that's maybe why they've upped their prices and they've done a bit of a Bremont. I don't know.
Done a Bremont. Very good. So it just struck me that there was, I think they've obviously celebrated the spring drive quite heavily. And they've sort of celebrated quartz, but they've not really done anything for the Pogue. So I hopefully there is something coming for that, because I was really looking forward to a reissue or something similar. They've reissued this, what is it called, the Apocalypse? Now, what is it, the Apocalypse? They don't call it the Sheen. What did they call it? What was
the Arnie?
The what?
Was it the Arnie?
No. What was Martin Sheen's character in Apocalypse Now called? It's the watch he wore in Apocalypse Now, if I remember correctly, that they've done as a reissue for this year. It looks really cool, but it's like $7,000 or more or something ridiculous.
Wow.
Because they had this fully cased one last year, which was the celebration. But there we go. So yeah, Seiko. I was a bit kind of with Seiko. I mean, they're really nice, but never going to see them, never going to buy one. A bit disappointing. Anything else catch your attention? We're going to be able to stretch this out into about 10 episodes, but did you go to TAG?
Yeah, I went to TAG because I really liked the Nanograph Tourbillon that they hinted at back at SIHH.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, cool, let's go see that. It was the only thing I was really interested in. Mm-hmm. Went to see it. Hunted, because I didn't want to look like a dick and walk up and go, where's that watch? And then they point and it's right in front of me. So I went looking, spent 10 minutes looking for it, couldn't find it, went and spoke to somebody, passed me on to somebody, and they said, yeah, it's not here. I'm thinking, you released this in January. You told everybody it was like coming out. That was at somebody else's show. You previewed it. Why the hell is it not at your show? When you walk into Baselworld, the first thing you hit is TAG. It is front and centre, well, front and to the right.
Yeah.
It's the first thing you see. Why is it not there? So it was a bit of a strange one. They had all their other stuff that I paid no attention to because I'm not interested. They had the Octavia, they had the Monaco stuff, they'd are connected, the latest version of that. Yeah, it was okay. I don't know, was there something I should have looked at?
Well,
you saw?
They've got this whole new Octavia range, which looks pretty decent if that's the kind of thing you're into. Certainly, they've moved on suitable distance from their 1990s and early 2000 abominations. They seem to be getting their act back together, along with Breitling, who I think the new broom in there has finally managed to wash away all the stuff that was planned 3 or 4 years ago that he's just had to put up with. So Breitling also appeared to have a great show. Did you visit Breitling at all?
No, they're one of the brands that are very much like Rolex. They don't let you see a lot,
all right,
which is a shame. because you would think with the change of ownership a year and a bit ago, they would have opened up a little, but no, they were quite closed off. They had a lot of PR girls.
Right. That does not surprise me.
They were doing like a photo shoot of all, to be fair, they had a few guys, but I mean, it was vastly outnumbered, females to male. Again, they were all nicely dressed, but there were tens. I think I've seen in Switzerland, even the threes are tens. That's what it's like out there. But no, I didn't get to see much of the Breitling stuff. I looked through their window display and I didn't really know what I was looking at because it's not a brand that I pay much attention to. But did I tell you about the old watchmaker guy that I spoke to?
Where was that? At Breitling?
No, that was up in the Independence
Hall. Well, I was going to ask you about the Independence as to who you saw, because I was keen to see if you'd seen like the likes of H. Moser or MBNF or De Bethune.
No. De Bethune and Moser were in a hotel across the road from Baselworld.
Right.
They were skirting the entrance fees and doing their own little thing.
Right, okay.
As they do. So I didn't see them, but I did see a few. I saw the Joker watch.
Oh, the Konstantin Chaikin. Is it cool? I've come close to buying one of them, but just...
Well, it was the new one. It was the Dracula one. Where the teeth, the fangs kind of protrude after, I think it's midnight until 6 in the morning.
Yeah, something like that.
And then they go back in. So it's not a day-night indicator, but it's almost. So that was cool. Got to you know, people say, oh, you can't try on the watches, you can't do this, you can't do that. Well, yes, you can.
People? Any particular people you have in mind?
You tell me.
No, I can't think of who those people are. No, don't know anybody. So was Konstantin Chaikin there himself?
He was there. Mm-hmm. I didn't see him. It was a woman on the stand, and she was dead nice. She allowed us to try the watch on, take photos, showed us all the features of it. Again, running out of time, you can't get around everything in the amount of time that we had, so I didn't spend long with them. There was a Chinese fella that had come across with a watch. I got some photos of that, again, rushing through it all. He had just been in, I think it wasn't the front page, but it was something in the New York Times.
Right.
On Friday, when I saw him, that he'd been had this article written, so I got a photo of that. That will end up on the website as well. And this old master watchmaker guy, who I spoke to, he was really, really cool. The guy's name was Sven Andersson.
Yeah, no, you mean the chap that's done the collaboration with Konstantin Chaikin?
Potentially. This is a guy that created the group that was there over the Independence.
Right, okay.
He was one of the co-founders of this.
Yeah.
And accidentally started speaking to him because there were some cool watches of, you know, the painting Dogs Playing Poker?
Yes, that's his watch along with Konstantin Chaikin. Konstantin Chaikin did the front of the watch and he did the back of the watch, I think. It was entered the GPHG award this year. So, Andersson Genève, I think it's the company, is it? Andersson,
it is, yep.
Is it Andersson Genève? You see, it comes out of nothing.
There you go. So you know more about him than I do. So I ended up speaking to him.
Cool.
Because I was looking at this cool Dogs Playing Poker watch and it was funky. I was taking a photo of it and he was kind of edging towards, you know, who's this guy taking photos of my stuff? Mm-hmm. And he started speaking to me in German or something and I just looked through him as I did with everybody I met and then just said English. Mm-hmm. And then he starts speaking to me in English because I'm a pleb.
Yeah.
And he was explaining about the watch and then he asked, you know, where am I from? See, as soon as you tell anyone you're from Scotland,
absolutely,
everything changes.
Yep.
Everything changes. And he was just talking away about stuff. He was telling me his history. He started watchmaking when he was 15. Uh-huh. He worked for Patek up until the 80s, and then he started out on his own.
Right.
He started this collaboration of independent watchmakers, and that's where this whole area was. Uh-huh. And he explained about, you know, the, like we just talked about there, Joker Watch, other bits and pieces that were on show, and just gave me a bit of a masterclass. He told me that back a few decades ago, he was known as the watchmaker of the impossible because he built a clock inside a bottle.
Oh, right, okay. Yes,
right. You know how it's cool when you see a ship in a bottle?
Yeah.
I asked him, I was like, how the hell did you do that? Uh-huh. And he explained that he had to build like tooling, his own tools that had long handles and stuff, and then try and build it. And I'm like, how the hell do you do that? That's crackle. So he was there. He was the co-founder of the AHCI.
Yeah.
Speaking to these people, phenomenal. And then there was lots of other brands upstairs in the Independence area, which were lesser value, but still cool, because, you know, me and you will buy a Swatch watch at 50 quid, as long as it's exciting or interesting, we are there. And Zeon, I think her name, or it's not Zeon, it's something like that, they do a watch that looks like a turbine turning in the front. Mm-hmm. Don't know if you know that one.
Is that the Peroi, the one that Josh Thanos has got? The ones like that?
Maybe. A little bit like that. There's a photo that I sent you in Dropbox of that one.
Yep.
Spoke to them. They were dead nice. Again, inexpensive, kind of cheaper stuff. There was some quartz pieces. Up at the back, they had all the Swiss Army tie-ins.
Right, okay.
Victrinox, and they had some nice things. It was just, there is something for everybody.
Cool.
And if you move away from Rolex, Patek, Tudor, Tag, down at the front, and you keep walking, there is just a ton of stuff in there that you could spend. I mean, if I'm going next year, which I'm pretty sure I will be, it won't be for a couple of days. I'm going to go for 3 or 4 days.
Cool.
And spend the time with... No, I'm not saying that everybody should do that. Mm-hmm. See, if you go for a day trip, which I've done the last 2 years, you will love it. Mm-hmm. You will come away buzzing like John, Chris, and Isaac were. But if you want to get right down, speak to people, get a bit of knowledge, a bit of depth, a bit of background on them, as well as the company, as well as the products, spend the time there. And also manage to blag loads of freebies on the way back home, so much so that I managed to dislocate my shoulder, I think.
Did you wait?
And I'm not kidding, my shoulder is buggered.
Did you weigh your bag like you did last time from SIHH?
Yep, I nearly burst the stitching in the bag this time. It was 15 kilograms I was walking around with my bag.
Oh, dear me. Tell me, just to go back to the Constantine Chaikin watch, okay, because I'm sorely tempted. Does it feel like £15,000 worth of watch?
Yeah.
It does. Does it? Because my only concern with it has been, my only concern, because it's a heck of a lot of money, is would you actually ever wear it, or would you just wear it twice a year when you were going somewhere funky that other watch people would appreciate it? Or could you actually get away with wearing it, you know, maybe not every day, but certainly more enough to justify the cost?
See, this is where we differ. I will buy things, obviously, a lot more inexpensive than what we've just spoken about. But things are cool looking, are a bit, not flashy because I don't wear gold or anything like that, but things, you know, are quite out there. You know, colourful, or like with the Apollo 8, it looks different from the other Speedies, and that's why I liked it.
Yep.
Same with like the motorbike and whatnot, it's kind of garish colours and things. But the Joker watch, where would you wear it? Because you're more, I would say you're the more business-like, refined character of Scottish watches.
I like, you know, to think of myself flamboyant, as more refined than you. That wouldn't be difficult, considering you're from
Well, you've had many centuries more to refine yourself. You know, I'm still a young whippersnapper that's out there been hip and happening, going to parties and things.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, for you, I don't know. I think you might find it difficult to find a place to wear it, unless you were heading out to Glasgow at the weekend, going to the casino, going to Corinthian, going and doing whatever, and being that face.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. You've unsold me from buying the Joker watch. Sorry, Constantine.
Well, I'm thinking, where are you going to wear your gorilla? Where are you going to wear your inventor?
Yeah, I've no idea.
They're kind of, they're slightly off kilter with the way you are, from what I can tell. So I think you should just give them to me. I'll just cancel my order and you can just give me everything.
That's it. That's just because I dress up when I come to meet you, because I'm so intimidated by your good looks.
It must be, yes.
Anyway, jawline. There is one story I wanted to hear, which we didn't touch on last time before we finish up for today, which was you teased us with the hardest working people at Basel. So who was the hardest
working... Oh, did I not tell you that story?
No, who was the hardest working person at Basel? I'm assuming it wasn't you or Adrian or Ben Clymer.
Didn't see Ben. Saw the girl, was it Cara from Hodinkee? I saw her kicking around, mentioned Ariel Adams, who was cracking. But no, the hardest working person at the whole show, and I didn't get her name, which is unfortunate, was the woman that worked behind the bar in the canteen area in the press facilities at Baselworld.
Okay.
Because from the moment I got there on Thursday till the moment we left on Friday, she was walking around, working hard, always smiling, always joking, always helping out, always offering help and assistance to everybody. It was a joy to see, because in Scotland, if you meet canteen staff, generally they're a little bit miserable. So she was phenomenal, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to get a photo of you, because you've made this a really good experience. So I went to take a photo of her, and she goes, no, you need to get everybody in. That's just the kind of person she was. So she grabbed a couple more staff. As I'm doing this, the woman at the side of me, this blonde MILF, kind of is looking a bit perplexed and is like pointing as if, like, what's this? Can I get involved? It turns out she's German, doesn't speak English. Uh-huh. She goes round the back into the canteen area, ends up posing with like four other people. We do the photo. She hands me her business card, and I'm like, that was the most surreal experience ever. But yeah, this woman that worked in the canteen cafeteria area, she was brilliant. She is employee of the year at Baselworld. Good, definitely.
Good. Well, I don't know if anybody that would know anything is actually ever going to listen to this, but if you happen to know who that was, then do direct message us what her name actually is, so we can give her a proper shout out. So if you're a regular at Baselworld and therefore know everybody, give us a shout. But that's very cool.
Yes.
Good. So you're determined to go back again next year. We'll obviously get stuck into more of these releases in some more detail in following episodes, but I think we're going to try and have a couple of interview guests we've got coming up shortly, which I'm quite excited about some of the names that are coming to speak to us. Although I may ditch you and I'll maybe just speak to them. So I think it's maybe time for me to go free solo and you can go and sit back and go skiing or something, or whatever it is you do, go drive motorbikes.
I'll go on Tinder.
Yeah, you can spend your time swiping left or right or whatever way it is you're supposed to swipe. I have no clue. don't know anything about it. So anything else you wish to contribute to today's show?
No, it's been really hard to try and think of everything that happened and condense it down to talk, even over two shows, and that's without going deep on particular product lines, watches, specification, anything like that. It was a great experience, and I really do hope that things start to turn a corner for both Basel, SHH, and if Swatch are putting on their own show, if they sort of bring that into the fold, so you've got three things in the same kind of area around about the same time, and make it more of a World's Fair type idea where you can go along and just check everything out and be happy. But even if nothing like that happens and it's only Basel next year or SHH in Basel, people should definitely come along, check it out, because we had a great time and it didn't cost a lot of money. It was a good little vacation away. And if you're into football and you travel around Europe following a team, this is just like it for a different hobby.
I mean, we've got a couple other shows coming up next year as well, some newbies, but well, not a newbie, but Salon QP in London. But there's also this new London show that's due next year, which I think they're trying to make...
Horologicon?
Yeah, they're trying to make more of a consumer fair. So it'll be interesting to see if that takes off and gives them a bit to think
and
about.
And who knows? By next year, there might be a Scottish Watches show in Scotland.
I absolutely think that the future here is we need to persuade Swatch that where they should be having their show is Glasgow.
Yeah,
I think we could do... I've got a farm shed. We could do them a cheap deal. Mm-hmm. Fresh lamb from the field.
Nice.
You know, barbecue, you know, whole
grass-fed beef,
whole hog roast, grass-fed beef. Yeah, the what is it they call that in Japan? The really expensive beef. We'll do some of that. The whole hog roast. I think.
Hey, if we outgrow your farm, the thing is, I've seen certain parts of your farm due to things you've sent me in photographs. It is big, but if we outgrow that, I've got contacts at the Royal Highland Centre at the SEC as well. So
well, I was thinking Royal Highland. So, well, I mean. What's his face from Edinburgh? What, he's already got a stand at the Highland Show.
Did you just say, what's his face?
What's his face? Cause
what's his face? Jonathan?
Jonathan, that would be his face. His face would be called Jonathan.
Sorry, Jonathan. I apologise for Rick. Oh, man. Yeah, he's got stand at the Royal Highland Show.
So he could just be known as the first. He'd be the guy that started it. So we'll just get everybody else along. We'll have a good time. Mm-hmm. Perfect. I mean, what better point? Oh, actually, to be fair, it wouldn't be quite perfect because it would be in Edinburgh. It really needs to be in Glasgow. To be fair, like the SECC.
Well, we could start small.
We could have it at the same weekend as the Model Railway Show so that I could, you know, flip between...
Is that a personal favourite of yours?
Flip between the Model Railways and the watch display. And if we could get,
you
like...
You could be on the right track with that.
And if we get, like, maybe some tractor, a wee tractor show or something at the same time, I'd just be a happy boy. I could just, like, spend the weekend there. That'd be no problem. So I think we need We possibly will just need to create a few Scottish watch brands ourselves. There's four or five kicking about now. We maybe just need to get a few more. We'll just go mainstream it on Kickstarter and we'll gather all these things at the SECC or, you know, in the bottom of a pub somewhere in the city.
No, that's Red Bar Events. You're getting confused again in your old age.
Maybe, you know, Princess Square would be quite nice for a watch show. The wheels are whirring now. See, you put these ideas in my head, it all goes horribly wrong. That's how this got going, and we're at 25 episodes. You're suggesting having Scottish watch shows? Blimey, we'll have like 2,000 exhibitors.
Stranger things have happened.
Indeed.
Because If anything, the last few months of running the website, podcast, Instagram page, speaking to people, and even seeing all these Scottish people coming out of the woodwork on live streams, on Watchbox and things, there's a massive amount of watch enthusiasts in Scotland. We've barely touched the surface. Every couple of days, I'm seeing people on Instagram messaging in or on Facebook or whatever saying, never knew about you guys, just stumbled across your podcast.
Yeah.
Things like that. So there is massive amounts. It's a case of nobody knows that there are other people in the hobby. That's what Adrian said, you know, when he went along to things, he didn't realise it was other people that were involved or interested in watches. So I think the next year is going to be really good, and where maybe the Swiss market's getting a little bit smaller and the shows are getting a little bit smaller here in the UK, things look like they may be actually growing and increasing.
So long as I can reserve the stand as soon as we walk into the Scottish Watches first exhibition event for selling jockstraps, then that's fine.
Done.
Sold. Okay. Thank you all very much for listening. Please check out the website, www.scottishwatches.co.uk. Check out the Instagram account at Scottish Watches. Please leave reviews on iTunes, wherever it is you download the podcast from. If you're going to leave bad reviews, please reserve them for Archie Luxury. He loves a good bad review, but please leave us 5 stars only. Lots of good reviews. We're now being listened to, I think, in 34 countries at the last count. But still big in Colombia. Still big in Colombia. Mm-hmm. Still haven't managed to break America, though. We're going to have to come up with some Beatles routine to break America. So we'll work on that.
Okay.
Although the Canadians quite like us, from what I can gather. But we've not yet managed to cross the border. We possibly just need to not slag off Southerners quite as much as we're doing.
We're big in Nashville.
Big in Nashville.
Networks.
Big in Nashville. Unfortunately, we're big in Nashville, and the only place that doesn't seem to have any internet in order to actually download the Bloomin' Show. All that remains to say is goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.